This is Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Football Friday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Teron Davenport filling in for Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline, and we're reacting to Thursday Night Football and the Vikings getting a much-needed win. And we want you to chime in on the conversation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's the number that you need to get on board. Right now, TD, we got to go out to the Goodyear Hotline to bring on somebody that you're well acquainted with. No Sports doubt. Center anchor, the ESPN College Football Podcast host, Kevin Negande. And Kevin, first of all, I didn't know that we were going to have a high school reunion here on Canty and Golic Jr. this Football Friday.
Chris, how about that, man? Me and TD go way back. I mean, way back. And Phoenixville High School represent, right? The Phantoms outside of Philadelphia. And I'm really proud of TD. He does fantastic work, especially when he does that whiteboard breakdown, as well as covering the Titans. So it's great that he's part of the ESPN family. What up, TD?
What's up, man? The best in the business. It's good to talk to you, man. I appreciate everything that you've done for me, man. This is a great opportunity right here, though.
Absolutely.
And I've Kevin, got nothing, man. You work hard. Chris will tell you that. You work hard, and that's all that matters.
Oh, no doubt about it. And he's clean with that bow tie when he's doing it, Kev. Let's make that clear.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir. But Kevin, I want to get to what we saw last night in Thursday Night Football, because there is the Minnesota Vikings side of this thing, but I want to focus on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Everybody's playing the blame game around Pittsburgh. Who's responsible for the lack of discipline that we saw from Chase Claypool and others down the stretch that potentially cost them an opportunity to tie that game and send it into overtime? I know Ben Roethlisberger threw Mike Tomlin under the bus in his post-game press conference, saying that those are issues that the head coach deals with and that's not his responsibility. But I got to ask you, who do you feel like is most responsible for what we're seeing in the Pittsburgh Steelers right now?
That's really hard because, Chris, I'm sure you know, too, that if we were on the outside and we said something about the Giants situation when you were in that locker room, you'd be like, well, you're not in here, right? You don't know. But I could tell you that how about Ben Roethlisberger? He is allergic to responsibility on any level, right? When you look at him through the years, when it's convenient for Ben to point the finger to somebody, he will make sure he can point the finger to somebody else. So it does never falls on him like he has done anything wrong. And that doesn't mean that he did anything wrong in this situation. It's just his response afterwards, yeah, where it is like immediately, hey, I'm going to pull out a mirror and let's deflect everything and just put it on my coach. And I'm not going to – he could have made this a little bit easier. Both him and Claypool could have made this a little bit easier in the post game, but just say, we've got to play better. I've got to do better, right? Because then it closes the door on more questions. When you leave the door open, then it allows everybody to kind of ask more and more questions. And Ben made sure to leave the door open and said, don't look at me. Look at the coach that's running the ship. And we don't hear that often from a veteran franchise quarterback who says, look at the coach, don't look at me. I find that just so funny because then that extends the conversation. And Chase Claypool after the game could have just said, it's my fault, I take responsibility. It just shows you that Chase still does not understand exactly what happened when he says, you know, I had to still do my first down thing. Now, with all of that being said, I got to tell you one thing. The Steelers have an amazing job of drafting wide receivers past that first round, in the second, third, fourth, fifth rounds, and then developing these wide receivers. But what have we seen through the years? They develop these wide receivers who become potential stars, and then all of a sudden, like, there's something that goes on in that locker room where they turn into, and I'm not saying that wide receivers are all divas, but they turn into, what about me? Let's look at me. How about me in every situation? And Claypool could have just, listen, he's been responsible. I mean, he leads the league in penalties as a wide receiver. He could have just squashed this whole thing and said, it's my fault. I take responsibility. I will work on this to be better. But by basically saying, somebody knocked the ball out of my hand, which played a role, but not understanding the gravity of it all, this comes back to Tomlin going back in that locker room and holding every single player accountable. And he tried to do that halfway through the game after the first penalty by benching Claypool. But when he's back in the game, he makes amazing plays, and then he costs you because of the, what about me? You saw my first down point. That is my first down point. So to answer your question, I think Tomlin deserves the responsibility because he carries weight in that locker room with his voice and who he is. And he's got to make a, you know, send a message to the entire team that that stuff's not happening, because it's happened in the past with Antonio Brown as well as Juju Smith-Schuster.
Well, you speak of sending messages, right? And we're going to bring this over to the NFC East. I know that's a division that's near and dear to your heart. Mike McCarthy guarantees a win. What are your thoughts on his guarantee in that Cowboys against Washington football team game?
I actually think it's fun. You know, if a coach is not going to make a comment like that, you don't talk about it. But the coach brought it on, and it's locker room conversation for not so much the Cowboys, but for Washington. It's like Mike McCarthy's trying to send the message to his team. Yo, I'm making sure you guys all know that all hands are on deck here. And let's not get lackadaisical heading into an NFC East rivalry game. Regardless of a two-game lead, we cannot afford to let our guard down against a Washington team led by its defense that's super, I think, super underrated when it comes to conversations on how good this team could be because of their defensive presence, how they've played the last 4 weeks. Heineke just play, you know, as long as he protects the football, they're going to be in every game. I think it's going to be a fantastic slugfest. I actually look forward to seeing how the Washington defense matches up against the Cowboys offense. But I don't have any issue. And maybe Chris can expand on that. When your coach says that publicly, I mean, that sends a message inside your locker room more than anything else.
Yeah, here's the one thing I'll say about that, Kev. When a player does it, you can understand it because they're actually the ones that are in between the white lines. When a coach starts talking that cash money, whether it's your coach or the opposing coach, I don't know, man. It just puts a bullseye on your team. So I get that it can go either way. But in this particular instance, because of what you said and knowing that this has kind of been an inconsistent team from an effort and focus standpoint the last month and a half, I get exactly why Mike McCarthy did it. But Kev, moving along, and we're talking with Kevin Negande, SportsCenter anchor on Canty and Golic Jr., staying in the NFC East. I don't feel like it would be right if we didn't ask you a question about your Philadelphia Eagles. And I know they've got the bye in week 14. They're not playing. But a lot of the conversation coming out of that Jets win last week was about whether or not Gardner Minshew should be the starter the rest of the way to give this team a better chance to being able to make a playoff push. Where do you stand on Minshew versus Jalen Hurts?
Do
I'm just
it,
asking. Where do you stand? Where do you stand, Kevin? Where are you at with this?
That's ridiculous. I think it's ridiculous. We already know who Gardner Minshew is, and to base Gardner Minshew's progress on a game against the Jets is foolish here, right? What we do not have is an answer for Jalen Hurts, and I think the Eagles need four more games to figure out where Jalen Hurts is. Also, coming off his worst performance of the season, he was abysmal against the Giants. So how do you respond? He's coming off that injury, right? That ankle injury. So where is Jalen Hurts mentally? What does he have now as he faces a really good Washington defense? They got Washington two of the next 3 weeks coming off that bye. In between, they got the Giants, and they closed out the season against the Cowboys. And they still don't have a complete answer on Jalen Hurts. And nor should they, because we need a full season to see him under center, I believe, before you can come to any real conclusions. So I think that this conversation about Gardner Minshew, one thing Gardner Minshew did really well against the Jets, he got the tight end Dallas Goedert involved. He can make that intermediate pass. Jalen Hurts cannot do that right now. And they desperately need Jalen Hurts to make that 15 to 25 yard pass, to find the tight end, to find Devontae Smith, to be more accurate. And Hurts has been if you look at the numbers outside of the screen game, Hurts has really struggled with his accuracy. They got to find more comfort for him. And he's just got to deliver throws. But I think the next 4 weeks or the next four games coming off this bye will give us a better idea on the progress of Jalen Hurts. But let's not forget, too, big picture here, Chris and TD. The draft next year, the Eagles potentially hold three first-round picks. Right now it's two, but that Colts one converts.
No, they got it now.
From two to one.
Got it now. Yeah, they've got
it. Is it already?
Yeah, okay. They've got it now.
Think about this. those three first round picks in a draft that does not feature a clear cut quarterback, I wouldn't be surprised if the Eagles say, all right, we're going to trade one of those picks or potentially two of those picks and move down and then get another pick for 2023 in a QB rich draft. And then you focus on quarterback in 2023 in the first round. And this coming draft, you focus on helping everybody else on the team because they have a ton of holes, especially on the defensive line and trying to figure out the back end when it comes to the safety and a cornerback position. Maybe you target that and you go with Jalen Hurts next year again.
Kevin, just so we're clear, I'm with you on the strategy with the offseason and the draft picks. I'm also with you on who should be the starter for the Philadelphia Eagles for the rest of the way. But we appreciate a few minutes of your time. Thanks for jumping on with us, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
My pleasure, guys. Happy holidays, everybody. Take care.
All right. That's SportsCenter anchor Kevin Negande on Canty and Golic Jr. Coming up next, we're going to get back into that NFC East conversation. The Washington football team and the Dallas Cowboys with a huge matchup. We'll let you know the odds and ends and the key matchups that you need to focus in on this particular game. This is Canty and Golic Jr., Teron Davenport filling in for Mike Golic Jr., ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Teron Davenport filling in for Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the Dr. Pepper Twitter line at @TDavenport_NFL, at ChrisCanty99. And right now we're about to dive into some NFC East conversation. But before we do that, tune into a football doubleheader Sunday as the Panthers host the Falcons, followed by the 49ers at the Bengals. Coverage begins at noon Eastern on select ESPN radio stations. And so, TD, we just heard from Kevin Negande about where he stands on Mike McCarthy laying down the gauntlet for his team, guaranteeing a win over the Washington football team on the road this weekend. I'm not even going to lie to you. This line scares the hell out of me. There's something fishy about that 4.5 that the Dallas Cowboys are laying on the road. And we know division games can always be really, really close. Mm-hmm. But just taking a big picture view of it before we dive into the matchup, with 5 games left, the Washington football team, they're only playing NFC East teams. The Dallas Cowboys, they've got 4 NFC East games and a game with the Arizona Cardinals. Do you think that the Washington football team, who is currently 2nd in the division, do you think they have an outside chance at being able to catch the Dallas Cowboys?
Oh, they definitely have an outside chance. And I think it's really going to depend upon what they could do with these final games because they are in division games. So, yeah, they have a chance, but when you look at the Cowboys, you know, that matchup with the Cardinals, that's going to be a big one for them. So the schedule, so to speak, on paper, because we know there's a difference on the field, the schedule on paper favors Washington.
Yeah, and I would kind of lean toward that too, right? Because you look at the other teams in the NFC East, I mean, none of them are over 500. They've got losing records in the New York Football Giants and the Philadelphia Eagles, so if you're Washington, these 2 games against the Dallas Cowboys have a little extra oomph. And if you're able to take care of your business this weekend on your home turf, which is what you're supposed to do when it comes to facing off against teams in your division,
right,
then you got to feel good about the prospects of them not only making the playoffs, but potentially making a run at being able to host a playoff game. And we know that this is the team that won the division last year. And with Taylor Heineke as their quarterback, they gave Tampa Bay a run for their money in their playoff game. So this is a team that's going to be coming into this game with a lot of confidence. I think the key for this matchup on Sunday is going to be the Dallas Cowboys' ability to be able to run the football.
Yeah,
and I know we say that's how that offense is built. It's got to be the catalyst for everything that they do. We fall in love with the perimeter weapons sometimes, CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, and then, of course, Dak Prescott, who I believe is a top 5 to 6 quarterback in the National Football League. But the offense has to go through the running game and Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott. And we got some news late this week about Tony Pollard dealing with a plantar fascia injury and him potentially being a game-time decision. So what does that do for you in terms of the overall impact on that Dallas Cowboys offense and the outlook on this matchup?
Yeah, I think it's really important to generate more explosives, right? You look, runs of 10 yards or more in their first 7 games, they had 30 of them. In the last 5, they've had 10. And then you also look at passes of 30-plus yards over those first seven games. They had 30 versus 17 over the last five. So the bottom line is this offense has to get more in sync. And just to further push more numbers, three and out series, they only had 14 in seven games. In the last five, they've had 22. So that's just more evidence of this offense coming together. And I get it. Tony Pollard is important, and the running the football is important. But also, one of the things that makes Dak Prescott one of those top five quarterbacks, in my opinion, and yours, is his ability to not only throw the football from the pocket, but he's also able to, and as a defender, I'm sure you can relate to this, right? You guys do everything that you have to do on third and 13. The play is covered perfectly. Dak Prescott finds a lane, escapes, he scrambles, he goes 14 yards, he steps out of bounds. You didn't even get to make him pay for getting the first down. That is deflating, it's frustrating. So when you look at Dak coming back from this calf injury, he said that one of the things that he wants to do is get out of the pocket a little bit more, and there's an example of that. Also, the Broncos, they kind of set the way to play this team, and you look at how a lot of teams more recently are going against the Cowboys, especially with Amari Cooper not playing. It's like, okay, well, yeah, it's much easier to go man because, you know, across the board you match up better. And when you go man, backs against the line of scrimmage, that gives the quarterback an opportunity to, you know, pick up a good amount of yards before the defense really realizes what's happening. So I think that's something to look at. They have to be able to run the football, yes, but I think this goes back to Dak Prescott and getting back to doing what he does so well, and that's generating plays, extending them, and making things happen from that perspective.
888-SAY-ESPN, that's 888-729-3776. We want you to chime in on the Dallas Cowboys and the Washington football team matchup and where you stand on Mike McCarthy issuing the guarantee for his team. We'll have more on that later, but coming up, what is your confidence level in the AFC divisional leaders? We'll get to that, but first, a word from Wendy's. A better breakfast starts with a better biscuit. That's why Wendy's is serving up a hot and buttery Wendy's breakfast biscuit with bacon or sausage, egg and cheese for just a buck. That's oven-baked bacon or savory breakfast sausage with fresh cracked egg and cheese on a buttery, flaky biscuit for just a dollar. So don't risk your biscuit someplace else. Get to your nearest Wendy's drive-thru during breakfast hours and get your Wendy's breakfast biscuit with sausage or bacon, egg, and cheese for just $1. Limited time only at participating U.S. Wendy's. Teron Davenport and Chris Canty, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Football Friday on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Teron Davenport filling in for Mike Golic Jr. Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And TD, we got to have that conversation because we are in the December, which is typically the time where contenders and playoff teams separate themselves from the rest of the bunch. And so we got to ask the question about the AFC divisional leaders. Which one do we have confidence in and which ones do we think are false flagging? Now, just to set the table for everybody that's out there, the division leaders for the AFC, we got in the AFC East, the New England Patriots at 9-4. We got in the AFC North, the Baltimore Ravens at 8-4. AFC South, a division that you're familiar with, TD, the Tennessee Titans at 8-4. And in the AFC West, the Kansas City Chiefs at 8-4. So I'll tee it off. We'll start last to first. Which team do you have the least amount of confidence in that they can hang on for their division title as we move closer to the playoffs?
Man, I hate to say it, but I'm going with the Ravens. Now, listen,
you're killing me, TD. That's my guys. You're killing me.
Hey, listen, man. Listen, I like I said, I hate to say it, but I think if I had to pick one that has, because the Bengals are right there on their heels. And if you look at the schedules, right, the Bengals have the 49ers, Broncos, and Ravens. It ends with the Ravens, and that is there in Cincinnati. You got the Browns, the Packers. That's a game where I think that could end up biting the Ravens because I think the Packers will come in and win, and then they're at Cincinnati. If I had to pick, I think it would be the Ravens because the other teams, you know, the Titans pretty much have that thing locked down in the South, and then we could get into the other divisions as well.
Yeah, I mean, the Titans have a one-game lead in the win column over the Colts, but it might as well be two because they swept the Colts in the season series. And so with five games to go and knowing that they don't play a team with a winning record, I mean, it's all but a fait accompli that the Tennessee Titans are going to win the AFC South, so I'm with you on that one. I don't like your answer about the Baltimore Ravens being the shakiest of the AFC divisional leaders, but I got to admit that you're probably right, and here's why. What we've seen from this Ravens offense of late has me concerned. Mm-hmm. Greg Roman not being able to come up with any answers in terms of facing pressure, facing blitzes in that offense, that's got to be something that's deeply concerning. It started back in week 10 when we saw that Thursday night game where the Miami Dolphins, Brian Flores, those guys were coming with zero blitzes. Javon Holland, all of those guys from the secondary getting after Lamar. They clogged up all of the running lanes with having all of those defenders at the line of scrimmage. They were completely gapped out across the line of scrimmage. And then when it came to the passing game, they weren't worried about playing zero coverage because they didn't feel like the Ravens had any receivers that can consistently win in one-on-one battles. And so I think that's the answer that Greg Roman has got to come up with before we see Lamar get past all of the turnover woes from the last 4 or 5 weeks. So that's my biggest concern. And then your degree of difficulty or your margin of error, however you want to frame it, actually goes down a little bit because you lose Marlon Humphrey on that Baltimore Ravens defense in that secondary. It's already a secondary that struggled with injury because we know they were missing Marcus Peters earlier in the year with a torn ACL. So, yeah, I've got some serious questions about the Bird Gang right now and their ability to be able to stop people. They didn't look great against Pittsburgh, and I'll admit Lamar has got to find ways to be better, but Greg Roman, their offensive coordinator, has got to find ways to alleviate some of the pressure, literally and figuratively, on Lamar in order to make that offense go. Now, going to all of the division leaders in the AFC, which one do you have the most confidence in that they're going to be able to hang on for their division lead and actually represent their division as a team and host a home playoff game? Which AFC divisional leader you have the most confidence in that they will win their division?
Oh, well, that's easily the Titans. And you have the head-to-head over the Colts. And then you look at the schedule, right? 49ers, they're working their way into the playoff mix. That'll be a tough game in Nashville. The Dolphins, we mentioned that zero blitz and what Brian Flores and those guys do. And then the Jaguars and Texans. But you compare that to a date with the Patriots, a date with the Cardinals. It's tough sledding. The Raiders. And then you finish up with the Jaguars, the Colts, that is. So I think the Titans will win that division. But I will say this. This Colts team, if they sneak into the playoffs, they remind me a lot of that 2019 Titans squad that nobody wanted to deal with. Why? Because you got this Martian in the backfield named Jonathan Taylor who runs the ball, and Frank Wright is finally giving him the football enough time. So even though I have the Titans winning that division, that Colts team, if they get that wild card, watch out for them.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Jonathan Taylor is a bowling ball of knives coming downhill. And when you have that offensive line that's fully healthy, that is a run game that nobody's going to want to see in the playoffs.
And the defense
is good,
too. But
they got to get there first, though, because right now they're on the outside looking in. But I can't get with you in terms of the team I have the most confidence in, the division leader that I expect is going to hang on to their lead in their respective division. For me, it's the team that I've been pubbing and bigging up the last couple of months, that is the New England Patriots. Yeah. I mean, winners of 7 straight and 8 of their last 9. I don't know how you couldn't love this team. I mean, let's face it. In a gotta-have-it situation for the Buffalo Bills, they went into Orchard Park and kicked the Bills' teeth in, TD. I mean, that was one of those I'm-going-to-take-your-manhood kind of games.
And give me I don't your think lunch
that
money.
That's, exactly. And I don't think that's a formula that the Patriots are incapable of replicating. I think you could see more of it. Now, they probably won't have to because I don't expect we're going to see any more games from them where they've got 40-mile-an-hour wind gusts. But the way that this team plays defense and then having the running game to complement that and Mac Jones as a rookie not making the critical mistake in the game that costs his team a chance to win, I got to say this, man, on a week-to-week basis, this Patriots team is the one that I trust the most, not just in the AFC, but in the entire NFL. And I'll also say this, the identity of this group is very reminiscent of what we saw from the 2001 New England Patriots mm-hmm. when they had a young Tom Brady, and he was carried by a very good Patriots defense. So it has a lot of those same vibes that go along with it.
And the key to that, the thing for me, just seeing it firsthand watching that Patriot-Titans game, turnovers. Over their winning stretch, they've generated, it's either 13 or 14 turnovers. Week in and week out. And it's not just on some, hey, I happen to be in the right place at the right time and pick the ball off. It's on J.C. Jackson going over, running back Deontay Foreman, breaking off a long run, and him having the wherewithal to go over. I'm not going to try to just tackle him. I'm going to punch the ball out. These are the things that this Patriots team does. And obviously with Bill Belichick focusing so much on turnovers, it's carrying over to game day. And you're seeing it, like I said, 13, 14 turnovers in the winning streak.
No doubt about it. And J.C. Jackson, I'm glad you brought his name up because I think he should be on the short list of candidates for Defensive Player of the Year. And especially when you look at T.J. Watt now dealing with the groin injury again, it's not outside of the realm of possibility that guy could find himself as the front runner. And guess what? Matt Judon probably shouldn't be much further behind in that conversation, just knowing the difference that he's made since they signed him in free agency, bringing him over from Baltimore. So a lot to like with that Patriots team. Again, it's the team that I trust the most, and I fully expect them to take care of their business the rest of the way coming off of their bye week. But coming up next, are the Sixers moving closer to trading Ben Simmons? We'll have that for you. It's Canty and Golic Jr. with Teron Davenport, filling in for Mike Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Teron Davenport filling in for Mike Golic Jr. Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline, and we want you to join the conversation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. Want to hear from you about the Dallas Cowboys taking on the Washington football team and where you stand on Mike McCarthy's guarantee. But we'll get back to that conversation a little bit later. Right now, TD, we got to tee up some breaking news in the NBA. 76ers sound like they're moving closer to trading Ben Simmons. This according to Woj, and it's also being reported by our very own Zach Lowe as well. Philadelphia's trade conversations on Ben Simmons gathering momentum in recent days. More teams engaged, more two- and three-way deal structures, talks ongoing as Sixers try to land a top 25 player for Simmons. Now, this is also a tweet that Woj just put out there because of the Damian Lillard grumblings that have been going on. Woj goes on to say, the Portland Trail Blazers have made it clear to the 76ers that all NBA guard Damian Lillard is not available to be discussed in trade talks, and franchise has no interest in moving him, sources tell ESPN. So now the question becomes, if the Sixers have been gaining momentum, gaining traction when it comes to trading Ben Simmons, what feels like the most likely destination for the all-star point guard?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I think you have to have Indiana, the Pacers. I think they have to be in the mix, right? Sabonis is a guy that obviously would come in and help out. Caris LeVert, Miles Turner, those are guys. But you know what? I think Portland could still be an option for the Sixers. Now, it would take a little bit more, like another team would have to come in and offer something to help balance the trade. But what about C.J. McCollum, right? Since Jimmy Butler left, like, you look at this team, if Embiid is not playing all world, like, they're not good in the playoffs. They need someone else who's going to step up and help out. I think McCollum would be a nice option, you know, give you that outside shooting that they desperately need. So that's somebody that could come in. But I said it during the break, you know, I like John Wall to the Sixers also. That would be a nice option as well, but that's another one of those things where you have to get another team involved to help out. But the bottom line is this. Ben Simmons is just – I don't think he's cut out for East Coast basketball, honestly. Brian Windhorst, he had a comment, and he said that Simmons would love to go to the Knicks. Well, let me tell you something. If this guy is scared to shoot in Philly at – the Mecca, they're not going to have that, right? you get near the cup, and especially at 6'10", and you have an opportunity, you better bang that thing. Right? You're supposed to be dunking on people's neck. That's why they love Obi Toppin. You see what I'm saying? So I don't think he's just more of a West Coast style player to me. I don't think that he belongs in the East Coast, period.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. And when you start talking about potential destinations for Ben Simmons, you automatically go to teams that are looking for a young all-star talent to try to rebuild around, and Ben Simmons being a cornerstone of that. But I mean, my mind goes to the teams that could potentially be contenders, teams that are looking to kind of punch up or enhance what they already have. And one of the teams that I've been kind of looking at and trying to figure out what else would they use or what else could they use in order to put their title contention hopes at a different level, the Golden State Warriors, man. Mm. I would love the Golden State Warriors to get involved in a Ben Simmons type of deal, because – Ben Simmons could be that point guard for him on the offensive end. And then defensively, his versatility, being able to guard 1 through 5, I think that would be a huge asset for the Golden State Warriors. So I know that they've got a surplus of talent on that team. You've got Steph. You're going to get Klay Thompson coming back. Andrew Wiggins is playing pretty good ball. You're going to get James Wiseman at some point. GP2, Jordan Poole, Moses Moody, Bielitsa. Like, they've got a lot of depth. I mean, you're talking about a team that's 9 or 10 guys deep. But in just thinking about some of that depth, if you can use some of those pieces, some of those assets, and flip that for a Ben Simmons, I don't know, man. It just feels like it would take that Golden State Warriors team to a different level. So I'll be interested to see the different machinations, the different packages that get floated out there. We saw on .com our ESPN insiders had 5 potential Damian Lillard trades a couple of days ago. And so I would imagine that we're going to start hearing some grumblings about the potential trade packages that would involve Philadelphia Sixers all-star Ben Simmons. But it's clear to me that Philadelphia is trying to find somebody to do the dance with, or a couple of somebodies, just because given where their team is at right now at 14-12 and sitting 7th in the Eastern Conference, they're clearly a tier below the top 3 teams in the East, which are the Brooklyn Nets, the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Miami Heat. And they've got to do something to get back into that conversation as being one of those teams that could be viewed as a potential favorite to come out of the Eastern Conference and get to the NBA Finals. Right now, as constituted and getting nothing from Ben Simmons, we can't expect this team would be capable of accomplishing that. So, TD, that's where I come in at. I feel like Daryl Morey and Doc Rivers are starting to have a little more urgency about trying to get a deal done for Ben Simmons, even if it doesn't mean that they get equal or fair value for him.
One other thing that they need to do, they need to start searching milk cartons. Like, put those requests out, man, because they got to find where Tobias Harris is, because this dude is getting all that money. And, man, come on. Like, you got to give me more than what you're giving. So that'll help out, too. When you decide to pay a guy like Harris that amount of money and he doesn't deliver, that puts a hamstring on the franchise.
Yeah, Tobias Harris has got to find a way to help be a closer for that team. Right now, it seems like Tyrese Maxey has stepped up in the absence of Tobias Harris, kind of underachieving. And, you know, Joel Embiid with the injuries that he suffered throughout the course of this early going in the season. But with Embiid back and looking healthy as he was last night against Utah, you feel like this Philadelphia Sixers team is poised to be able to go on a little bit of a run here. They just got to make sure they add the requisite pieces to the mix that they already have in order to put them on that championship level. Because, like I said before, in my opinion, there's a clear difference between the Sixers and the top teams in the Eastern Conference. But coming up next, we'll get your pockets right heading into the NFL weekend. It's Canty and Golic Jr. with Teron Davenport filling in for Mike Golic Jr.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.